Followed by USA Today at 2.
First Baptist Church, 2104 West Louisiana Avenue in Midland, has scheduled a Joyful Sound Choir from 10:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. Thursdays through May 27th at the church choir room. All singers from the community age 55 plus are invited to join. For more information, call James Irvin at 432-683-0600.
As we live through one of the country's most severe economic downturns, we strive to bring you information about money, investing, consumer news, and the energy industry. Mondays at 6 a.m., it's the Kiplinger's newsletter and Money Matters. Tuesdays at 6 a.m., The Economist. Wednesdays at 6 a.m., a weekly roundup of the Lone Star State with News of Texas. Thursdays at 6 a.m., Consumer Reports. And Fridays at 6 a.m., Permian Basin Oil and Business News from the Midland Report. Order Telegram and the Odessa American. Weekday mornings at 6 on Recording Library of West Texas Radio.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland, Odessa area. It's 76 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the upper 60s. Then, tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a high in the upper 80s. Tomorrow night, a few showers with a low in the mid 60s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 1 p.m.
This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Mind's Eye.
Hello, this is Betsy, and I'll be reading Entertainment Weekly this week. The following articles are from their website, EW.com. Ben Affleck is honoring Jennifer Garner on Mother's Day. On Sunday, the actor, 48, shared a sweet tribute to his ex-wife, with whom he shares three kids, daughters Violet, 15, Serafina, 12, and son Sam, 9. So happy to share these kids with you. Luckiest parents in the world. Thanks for all the good you do. Happy Mother's Day. Love their dad, Affleck wrote, along with throwback photos of Gardner with their children, including a family photo from a past Halloween holiday for which he dressed as the Tin Man. Speaking of people, last year Affleck said he and Gardner, 49, have always made a point of being united for their kids. When you have children with somebody, you're connected to them forever, the father of three said, and I'm very lucky she is the mother of my children. I'm very grateful and respectful of her, he added of Gardner. Our marriage didn't work, and that's difficult. Both of us really believe that it's important for kids to see their parents respect one another and get along, whether they're together or not. Affleck shared that it's vital to him that his children know how much admiration he has for their mother. It's important for my kids to know that I respect and care about Jan, and she treats me the same, he said. I have a lot of respect and gratitude towards her, and I wish her the very best. Affleck and Gardner, who married in 2005, announced their separation in June 2015. They settled their divorce in October 2018. This story originally appeared on People.com. Ryan Reynolds is known to playfully troll his wife, Blake Lively, on social media and vice versa. On Sunday, the free guy actor, 44, began his Mother's Day to Lively with a genuine moment to celebrate the mother of his three daughters. It can't be said enough. You're the heart and soul of every moment this family shares, he began in the caption. I'm grateful for the light and for the kindness you smuggle into each and every second of our lives, Reynolds continued. I see you in the eyes of our children, every laugh, every blink, and every thoughtful moment of vulnerability. The tender grit it takes to be a mother in 2021 is an act of pure strength and heroism. Reynolds then added some jokes about their relationship. Never could I have predicted anonymous airport bathroom sex would lead to this, he wrote, or how you hire Dog, the bounty hunter, to find me. Either way, I'm lucky to reflect on a little of the sunlight you shine on all of us. Happy Mother's Day, my love. Reynolds and Lively, 33, met on the set of the 2011 DC superhero movie Green Lantern, and they wed in September 2012. The couple shares daughters, James, 6, Ines, 4, and Betty, 1. The pair frequently trolls each other on social media, most recently after attending a New York Yankees game. I love meeting fans, Lively wrote with a selfie of the two of them in front of the field, which she posted on her story. In addition to Mother's Day, Lively is celebrating some professional news. The mother of three will be producing and starring in a Netflix feature adaptation of the Dark Horse comic Lady Killer, with a script by Juno and Jennifer's body rider, Diablo Cody. Lively is set to star as 1950s housewife Josie Shuler, who leads a picturesque life with a husband and kids when she's not secretly working as a killer for hire. The danger of her double life soon threatens the safety of her family. This story originally appears on People.com. Jeffrey Dean Morgan and Hillary Burton celebrate 12th anniversary of their very first blind date. Hillary Burton and Jeffrey Dean Morgan wed 2 years ago, but they had a decade-long courtship before they officially tied the knot. And on Saturday, the One Tree Hill alum, 38, celebrated the 12th anniversary of their first date. Oh, it was something else. The smoking hot Jeffrey Dean Morgan showed up, and it was game over, Burton continued. Here's to being crazy kids, living all country, taking birth to two doppelgangers, and getting gray hair, and still being totally inappropriate together. Well, here are some other celebrities who met on blind dates. Morgan, 55, also showered his wife with love on this special day. 12 years ago, met this one, blind date. I had a gal, been with her ever since that night. In fact, two kids later, one 11, do not do the math, finally married, and never could have imagined this kind of happiness, the actor wrote. The adventures have been many, and planning new ones as I write. Thank you, Jensen and Danielle, for taking a wild stab in the dark. And thank you, Hillary Burton, for goddamn everything. Happy Timmy Nolan Day. Props to Irish car bombs and not eating a perfectly good bun on a hamburger. Love all the stuff. Love you, Mrs. Morgan. Last April, Morgan's Supernatural co-star Jensen Ackles revealed how he set up Morgan with Burton, who starred with Ankle's wife Danielle Harris in One Tree Hill. Hillary was in town visiting in L.A., and she was staying with us, and so we went out one evening, he recounted on Morgan's AMC talk show, Friday Night with the Morgans. I remember it. It was like an Irish pub on the lake. And there we were sitting, the three of us, Ankles continued. I convinced Morgan to come on down the street and meet us for a drink. And you did. And you pulled up in your Harley, and we were sitting there in the front window, and Hillary sees this guy get off of the bike in slow motion and take his helmet off and throw his hair around. It was all very surreal. And that was pretty much the rest of the evening. Jeffrey Dean Morgan says he was nervous as hell about wife Hillary Burton's walking dead part. Burton also recalled their first encounter to People in April 2020. When he came along, He was so sure of himself, she said. I was not a girl anyone pursued. I've always been alpha. The actress added, and Jeffrey was like, you're gonna be my girlfriend. It was so nice to be pursued. He's kind of a cute dude, she said, and I like, he knew exactly who he was. His confidence was intoxicating to me. Burton and Morgan have since welcomed son, Augustus 11, and daughter, George Virginia 3. They finally tied the knot in New York in October 2019. I had reached a point where I was perfectly fine keeping on going, she told People of their decision to finally get married. But Jeffrey was like, wouldn't it be great to get married? Gus would be our best and George will be there. That picture was painted was really attractive to me. Our wedding was a big thank you to all the people who had supported us. Most recently, Burton played her real-life husband's on-screen wife in a flashback-filled episode of The Walking Dead. Working with her on this probably was the highlight of my career. I sure know how lucky I am, he wrote. This story originally appeared on People.com. Lloyd Price, the singer-songwriter behind such hits as Personality and Stagger Lee, who helped lay the groundwork for the rise of rock and roll, has died. He was 88. Price's wife, Jacqueline, confirmed his death to the Associated Press. The singer died Monday at a long-term care facility in New York of complications of diabetes. Nicknamed Mr. Personality after his 1959 hit, Price was born in Louisiana, Keener, a suburb of New Orleans, in 1933, one of 11 children. He became a crossover success early in his career when his song Laudy Miss Claudie, recorded when he was just 19, spent 7 weeks atop the Billboard R&B chart in 1952. Inspired by a local DJ's catchphrase, the song was a success with white and black singers alike years before the advent of rock and roll, and soon became a key influence on the early rock sound. Elvis would cover the song 4 years later. I revolutionized the South before Laudie, Miss Claudie. White kids were not really interested in this music, Price later recalled. But 10 months later, I was in business. They were putting up ropes to divide the white and the black spectators. But by 10 o'clock at night, they're all together on the dance floor. Price's career was interrupted, however, when he was drafted and sent to Korea in 1953. Upon his return 2 years later, he found his place in sound had been taken over by artists like Little Richard, Chuck Berry, and Fats Domino, who played piano on Laudie Miss Claudie. But Price would soon mount a comeback. He founded his own record label, KRC Records, and recorded a string of top tens, including Personality, I'm Gonna Get Married, and Stagger Lee, a version of the old folk song about a barroom murder. Price was a boldly independent artist, particularly by the standards of the time, holding his own publishing rights and serving as his own agent and manager. Though his musical success faded in the 1960s, Price continued to record sporadically and found two more record labels, Double L and Turntable, while branching into other fields. He helped promote Muhammad Ali's Rumble in the Jungle in Zaire in 1974 and the Thriller in Manila in the Philippines the next year, and would later run two construction companies and a line of Southern-style foods. His musical career never completely ceased. Price performed the Little Richard, Ben E. King, and more on oldies turns throughout the 1990s and 2000s, and was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1998. His final album, This Is Rock and Roll, was released in 2017. May you rest in peace. Hollywood is behind an increasingly important, clear message to the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, demanding more significant reforms from the body that awards the Golden Globes each year. The HFPA approved a slate of changes on Thursday intended to address months of controversy over the lack of diversity in its ranks. According to a statement, they planned reforms to include increasing the HFPA's membership by 50% over the next 18 months, with a specific focus on recruiting black members. The body at this time currently has none, and they want to hire a diversity, equality, and inclusive, and establishing a committee of racially and ethnically diverse members who will advise the board and oversee critical organizational reform. But many high-profile Hollywood figures have already come forward criticizing these measures, arguing that more change is needed. Advocacy group Time's Up was the first to critique the changes, calling them window dressing platitudes in a statement released Friday. Sadly, the list of reforms adopted yesterday and endorsed by NBC Universal and Dick Clark Productions are sorely lacking and hardly transformational. Time's Up president and chief executive Tina Chichi said in a statement, "Instead, these members ensured that the current membership of the HFPA will remain in the majority and that the next Golden Globes will be decided with the same fundamental problems that have existed for years." By Saturday, A-list stars had begun to speak out as well. In a statement provided to EW, Scarlett Johansson recalled facing sexist questions and remarks from HFPA members that bordered on sexual harassment. "It is the exact reason why I, for many years, refused to participate in their conferences," the Black Widow star continued. "The HFPA is an organization that was legally by the likes of Harvey Weinstein to amass momentum for Academy recognition, and the industry followed suit. Unless there is necessary fundamental reform with the organization, I believe it's time that we take a step back from the HFPA and focus on the importance and strength of unity within our unions and the industry as a whole." Johansson's Adventures co-star Mark Ruffalo joined her, writing that HFPA's reforms were discouraging in a social media post on Friday. "Now it's time to step up and to make the wrongs right. Honestly, as a recent winner of a Golden Globe, I cannot feel proud or happy about being a recipient of this award." Meanwhile, Netflix and Amazon said they would stop doing business with the HFPA until more significant reforms take place. "We don't believe these proposed new policies, particularly around the size and speed of membership growth, will tackle the HFPA's systematic diversity and inclusion challenges or the lack of clear standards for how your members should operate." Netflix co-CEO Ted Sarandos wrote in a letter to the HFPA's leadership committee obtained by Deadline. "So we're stopping any activities with your organization until more meaningful changes are made. Netflix and many of the talent and creators we work with cannot ignore their collective failure to address these crucial issues with urgency and rigor." In a statement on Saturday, Amazon Studios said, "We have not been working with the HFPA since these issues were first raised, and like the rest of the industry, we are awaiting a sincere and significant resolution before moving forward." A group of more than 100 PR firms, which had previously banded together to demand profound and lasting change from the HFPA, echoed the streamers in their own statement writing, "We will continue to refrain from the HFPA events, including press conferences, unless and until these issues are illuminated in detail, with a firm commitment to a timeline that respects the looming of 2022 season reality." After years of criticism, the HFPA's current scandal burst wide open in the wake of a Los Angeles Times exposed in February, detaining alleged ethical conflicts and other misconduct within the organization, as well as its diversity issues. HFPA's leadership soon pledged to increase transparency and diversification, bringing three members out during the 2021 telecast to publicly stress that the group would welcome Black voices into its voting base. Pressure on the organization has continued to build since then amid further scandal, including the departure of the diversity strategic Sean Harper, who left the HFPA in April, just over a month after he'd been hired. This came shortly after the member Philip Burke allegedly called Black Lives Matter a racist hate movement in an email. Burke was expelled from the group after that. Representatives for the HFPA did not immediately respond to EW's request for the comment. However, HFPA President Ali Sarr did respond to Netflix letter writing, "We hear your concerns about the changes our association needs to make, and we want to assure you that we are working diligently on all of them. We can assure you that our plan reflects input from our supporters and critics alike, and we truly believe that our plan will drive meaningful reform and inclusion with our organization in a way that the entire industry can be proud." Thank you for listening to this comment. Jesse Williams is leaving Grey's Anatomy. And the season 17 surprises just keep on coming to Grey's Anatomy. Following a season of twists, it seems Dr. Jackson Avery, Jesse Williams' time on Grey's Anatomy is about to come to an end. EW has confirmed that Jesse Williams is departing Grey's Anatomy this season. After joining the show in season 6 as one of the few tolerable Mercy West interns, Jackson quickly became a fan favorite, farming connections with Christina, Lexi, and becoming Mark Sloan's devoted student. But over the years, one of the biggest storylines has been his love story with April. And now it suddenly makes sense why Drew is back in this week's episode. According to Dateline, which broke the news, Jackson's exit will be revealed at the end of Thursday's episode, which reunites Jackson and April for some potential closure. As for his actual goodbye, EW has confirmed that Williams' final episode of Grey's will air on May the 20th. Grey's Anatomy airs Thursdays at 9 p.m. ET on ABC. May 7th was National Children's Mental Health Awareness Day, and given the events of the past year, the day serves as a good reminder to take stock in how the little ones in our lives are faring emotionally and mentally. Celebrities like Emma Stone, Tan France are speaking out as part of the Getting Better Together campaign for the Child Mind Institute, an independent nonprofit dedicated to changing the lives of children and families struggling with mental health and learning disorders. In these candid videos, they discuss their own experience with things like anxiety and depression, as well as ways of handling stressful events like the global pandemic in an effort to reduce the stigma surrounding mental health. Everybody struggles with either a little bit of sadness or a little bit of worry or a little bit of fear around the idea of change in general. Stone offers in her video, everybody has some of those feelings inside, whether they say it or not. According to the CDC, 1 in 6 U.S. children ages 2 to 8 have a diagnosed mental, behavioral, or developmental disorder, with approximately 4.4 million kids ages 3 to 17 have diagnosed anxiety, and approximately 1.9 million kids in that same age group having diagnosed depression. And when children with a mental health disorder aren't identified or treated, the issues are compounded. It seems like almost every day there are tragic headlines and news alerts that remind us how necessary it is to talk about these mental health issues for everyone, especially our youngest. By prioritizing and investing in our children's mental and emotional well-being, by encouraging them to talk about their feelings and emotions, this can truly help. For more resources and tips, please check out the Child Mind Institute and Mental Health America. Thank you for listening. Jason Statham and Guy Ritchie's latest project, Wrath of Man, leads the box office this week with an estimated $8 million. As the coronavirus rates continue to drop dramatically, cities are loosening restrictions and more people are safely able to enjoy many of their favorite pastimes, including watching first-run films at their local theaters. Currently, 60% of North American theaters are currently back in business. The heist thriller, Statham and Ritchie's fourth generation, follows armed security guard Patrick H. Hill Statham, whose skills reveal he's not who he is. H. is a man on a mission, and he's bearing a grudge with a connection to an earlier armored truck robbery that left two guards and a civilian dead. EW gave the film a C, saying, "There's little of the swaggering visual style Ritchie made his name on. For all its casual brutality, there's a basic cable blandness to his execution here that feels less stripped than merely cheap." Statham made his acting debut in Ritchie's Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels in 1998, after reteaming for Snatch for 2 years later and Revolver 5 years after that. The Amy film Demon Slayer has proven to be a worthwhile movie since its April 23rd debut, which trailed Mortal Kombat by a tiny margin. Demon Slayer has earned an estimated $40 million, besting Mortal Kombat's $38 million, according to Cosmore. This will be something we'll have to see. We want to wish you the very, very best. Sometimes reinvention means going back to the basics. The Upshaws co-creator by Regina Y. King, Girlfriends, Insecure, and comedian actress writer Wanda Skies juices the multi-camera family sitcom model with fresh dynamics, depth, and genuine laughs. Mike Epps stars as Benny Upshaw, a working-class mechanic living in Indianapolis with his wife, Regina Kim's Phil. Before the pilot has reached the 10-minute mark, we have a complete picture of the family's rich and complex backstory. Benny and Regina have two daughters, a 13-year-old Akia and 6-year-old Maya, as well as a grown son, Bernard Jr., who was born while they were in high school. Regina's older sister, Lucidi, thinks Benny is a good-for-nothing, primarily because he had a fourth child, Kelvin. Well, with a different woman the year Aaliyah was born. Well, let's see what happens. Both Sky and Hicks have more than 2 decades of TV on their resumes, and The Upshaws, which premieres May 12th, benefits from the sitcom expertise. This may look like a traditional family sitcom, but it's Netflix, so the characters use profanity at their leisure. Oh, my goodness. There's an old-school Norman Lear-style rhythm to the writing, particularly in Benny and Lucille's ongoing insult-a-thon. Shouldn't you be somewhere stomping on Tokyo? And then there's the Black Lady sketch show that is cheeky perfection as Benny's baby mama, Tasha. Well, guilty pleasure viewing with Kitty. But it's TV's Treasure Fields who holds the Upshaws together. Regina is a three-dimensional character with life struggles. She's got 20 years' experience as a hospital administrator, but she's passed over for a promotion because she doesn't have an MBA. She's happy with Benny, but still grapples with resentment over the Tasha situation and the many ways it complicates her family's life. Fields is a master of it because I said so, Death Glare, and she and Epps have a sweet comic chemistry, but she shines in the dramatic moments too, bringing authenticity to Regina's emotional characters. In most family comedies, Regina would be there to roll her eyes at Benny's antics. On the Upshaws, Benny's antics make us root for his wife all the time. We'll look forward to watching this new sitcom. Sounds great. Well, now I'm going to share with you the 20 best new books to read in May. And this is as of May 4th, 2021, which, of course, can be done online as well. The first book is The Last Thing He Told Me by Laura Dave. Currently in the works as an Apple TV adaptation starring Julia Roberts, this page-turner opens as her husband disappears, and on the same day it's announced that his company is being investigated by the federal government. He leaves her only a note about his daughter, kicking off a wild horse that sees the mother-stepdaughter pair traveling across the country to uncover what really happened. Should be terrific. Next, we have Sunshine Girl, An Unexpected Life by Juliana Margulis. In an unflinching memoir, the Good Wife actress opens up about her disjointed childhood, her parents' messy divorce, her rise to fame, and of course, George Clooney. Next, we have The Wreckage of My Presence by Cassie Wilson. The Wreckage of My Presence is a comedian, podcast host, and perhaps most notably, People's Most Beautiful 40-year-old pens a collection of essays inspired by the grief she felt surrounding her mother's passing and the people and co-stars who helped her through it. She shares rip-roaring stories about her wacky upbringing and her early days in the comedy scene and reflects on the lessons she's learned so far. The next one is Great Circle by Maggie Shipstead. In this novel that's just over 600 pages, Circle weaves two storylines, the coming out of age tale of fearless female pilot Marianne Graves, saved from a sinking ocean liner in 2014 and eventually lost forever attempting a record-breaking flight around the world, and the making of a movie about her life in current-day Hollywood. It is a feat of a story in every sense of the word. Number five, Secrets of Happiness, a novel by Joan Silber. As protagonist Ethan grapples with the aftermath of a reveal about her father's second and secret family, he finds himself inside his own love triangle. And number six is Chanel Cleeton, which is New York Times best-selling author of New Year in Havana and a Reese Witherspoon book club pick, is called The Most Beautiful Girl in Cuba, a novel. It is a historical fiction novel based on the life of Evangelina Cisnero, about three revolutionary women in 19th century Havana. That sounds wonderful, too. And number seven is called Hurricane Summer. It is by Asha Broomfield. Sometimes the story is inside of you. Narrator Tilla is beginning a story, a summer in Jamaica, visiting her semi-estranged father, when she uncovers powerful family secrets that affect her own life, all while a hurricane threatens to bear down on the island. This coming-of-age tale tackles colorism, classic, and more. Number eight, Second Place, a novel by Rachel Cutts, author of the Outline Trilogy. Lucy, based on a famous art patriarch Mabel Dodge Lewis' relationship with D.H. Lawrence, Cutts' novel veers off course from her usual literary fare with a story about a woman living in a rural European town enduring some light crisis and middle-aged malice, while also entertaining a successful artist on her property. Number nine is Sorrowland, a novel by Rhys Solomon. Sorrowland, this blending debut, blends gothic fiction with fantasy elements, following a woman who escapes her religious compound with her newborn twins to live in the woods. And number 10 is Competitive Grieving, a novel by Nora Zelensky. It is a dark comedy about a woman dealing with the sudden loss of her closest friend, who just happened to be a rising television star. Well, there are lots to choose from, so please go to the library and choose which one you would like to listen to. I'm sure you will find it very, very entertaining. Would you believe that Stacey Abrams has a knack for being ahead of her time? She has written a book. Her riveting new legal thriller sounds ripped from the headlines. It follows clerk Avery King as she becomes embroiled in a conspiracy involving a president with totalitarian tendencies and her boss, a Supreme Court justice whose failing health threatens the future of the American legal system. But the novelist and the voting rights activist conceived the story back in 2008 during a lunch with a fellow lawyer from Abrams' farmer firm. She was pondering this gap in the Constitution that if a federal judge was not well, they could not be removed. Abrams recounts to EW, "That night, I wrote the first scene." Abrams was then a Georgia state legislator and published romance author. She worked on While Justice Sleeps Between political campaigns, voter registration projects, and novel writing using Selena Montgomery, literary agents passed on the thriller because it seemed outlandish. They basically were like, no one really cares about the Supreme Court. That's been overdone, and we wouldn't have a president who would do something like that, Abrams tells EW. That was in 2015. Fast forward through her run for Georgia governor, which brought her to national prominence, and 4 years of the Trump administration, and suddenly not so outlandish after all, though Abrams did have a chance, the flip phones in the book to smartphones. Justice may seem a jump for Abrams, who also published two works of nonfiction, Lead from the Outside and Our Time is Now. But she sees it as an extension of her life's work. It's all about storytelling, she reflects. It's just the degree to which my storytelling has to be grounded, in fact, versus the ability to fictionalize it. But what I think I do well, even in my fiction, is that I can be far-fetched and absurd, but it seems real and possible. As Selena Montgomery, Abrams published romantic substance novels, which came with her own thrills. My first romance novel was intended to be an espionage novel, she explains. But back in 1991, I was told by publishers, don't run espionage by or about women. I was like, I know I've seen women spies before. Where did I read them? In romance? Abrams, who supported the romancing, the runoff auction organized by romance authors for voter rights, has never been shy about her allegiance to romance. Even as she pivots away from her now, from romance and into political fiction. Abrams explains that publishing under a pen name was meant to provide clarity. I sold my first romance while I was in law school. I also published my first treatise on the operational dissonance of the unrelated business income tax exemption, she quips. That was going to confuse people. It was easier to create a brand identity for my romance. It's hard to publish tax policy under this, but now that people know that I'm a tax nerd and a romance novelist, the brand identity issue is no longer true. In other words, Abrams is forging ahead. Increased presence on a national stage means she no longer has to fit herself into pre-established boxes. Indeed, Berkeley has just announced that she'll be repackaging and publishing Abrams' first three novels, long out of print, with the new byline, Stacey Abrams writing about Selena Montgomery. Well, I write for my moral core, she asserts, and I want my heroes to actually have to grapple with things and to understand that you can be good and right and still make mistakes and still cause pain and harm and still not get everything you think you deserve. While Abrams' storytelling may or may not be what we deserve, it is what we need. While Justice Sleeps hits shelves May 11th. That sounds so exciting, and we will look forward to reading her book. Well, my friends, that's about all for now. I hope you enjoyed learning about what is going on, and I hope everyone had a wonderful Mother's Day and a happy, happy weekend, and we'll look forward to talking to you again next week. This has been Betsy with EW and with Entertainment Today. Thank you.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, USA Today, followed by the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American at 3. This week on the Recording Library of West Texas Radio's Saturday Night Movie, the audio-described swashbuckler, Pirates of the Caribbean, The Curse of the Black Pearl.
You don't know what this is. This is Aztec gold. One of 882 identical pieces they delivered in a stone chest. Cortez himself. Blood money paid to stem the slaughter he wreaked upon him with his armies. But the greed of Cortez was insatiable. So the heathen gods placed upon the gold a terrible curse.
They've taken Elizabeth, and we must save her!
Hello, Poppin. All the scattered pieces of the Aztec gold must be restored, and the blood repaid.
Search every cabin, every hole, down to the building.
Black Pearl. She's been praying on ships and settlements for near 10 years. Never leaves any survivors.
Jack Sparrow. He talked about the Black Pearl.
Don't y'all remember Captain Jack Sparrow?
You're familiar with that ship, the Black Pearl?
Spring me from this cell, I swear on pain of death. I shall take you to the Black Pearl and your bonny lass.
I may have deserved that. Do you think this wise boy? Crossing blades with a pirate.
You threaten my swan.
the Black Pearl.
Say goodbye.
Goodbye.
You're off the edge of the map, mate. Here in every monster.
That's not good enough.
Elizabeth.
I saved your life, you saved mine, we're square.
Aye!
We should drop canvas, sir!
She can hold a bit longer.
An immortal that removes but a single piece from that stone chest shall be punished. Eternity.
The audio described Pirates of the Caribbean, The Curse of the Black Pearl, starring Johnny Depp, Jeffrey Rush, Orlando Bloom, and Keira Knightley. Saturday night at 7 on Recording Library of West Texas Radio.
To bring us up to time for our next regularly scheduled program, we now bring you the following informative feature.
To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Is pregabalin restricted? Dear Dr. Roach, I get severe nerve pain in my calf area due to diabetes. I saw an ad for Lyrica on TV and found that it is generic medicine called pregabalin is available now. I requested my primary doctor prescribe it for me, but he declined, saying that it is in the category of opiates and cannot be described by him. Please let me know if this is true, that his license has restrictions on prescribing such medicines. If so, should I change my doctor? Answer. Pregabalin Lyrica is not an opioid. It works on a different receptor called the GABA receptor, similar to how drugs like diazepam or Valium work. However, it is a controlled substance, although it is classified as having the lowest risk for abuse potential. Some physicians do have the ability to prescribe controlled substances. They must apply to do so. Both pregabalin and closely related gabapentin, Neurontin, are effective treatments for diabetic neuropathy. They are not right for everybody, and there are alternatives that are not controlled substances, such as amitriptyline. Rather than asking for a particular treatment, such as Lyrica, you might ask your primary doctor for what he thinks is the best treatment for your severe calf pain. He may wish to get additional information, choose a different treatment, or refer you to an expert in treating nerve pain in people with diabetes.
You need some sympathy, well, so do I. You've got your troubles, I've got mine. She used to love me, that I know, oh, 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 oh. And it don't seem so long ago.
I say to you, my friend, that I ain't got no pity for you. Boy, I ain't true. You see, I lost my little girl too.
I'd help another place another time. You've got your troubles, I've got mine. You've got your troubles, I've got mine. You've got your troubles, I've got mine.
This is a Recording Library of West Texas Community Update.
Highland United Methodist Church, 1808 North Dixie, and volunteers offer a backdoor blessing meal at 6 p.m. Wednesdays in the Fellowship Hall. There is no charge. Any donations contributed go toward Highland's Children's Ministries. Call 332-0261 or email highlandumc.odessa@gmail.com or visit highlandodessa.com.
Starting Thursday on the Noon Book Hour, Recording Library of West Texas Radio proudly presents the novel which was the basis for the classic film starring James Dean, Elizabeth Taylor, and Rock Hudson, Giant, a novel. Giant is Pulitzer Prize-winning author Edna Ferber's sweeping generational tale of power, love, cattle barons, and oil tycoons set in Texas during the first half of the 20th century. When larger-than-life cattle rancher Jordan Bick Benedict arrives at the family home of sharp-witted but genteel Virginia socialite Leslie Linton to purchase a racehorse, the two are instantly drawn to each other. But for Leslie, falling in love with a Texan was a lot simpler than falling in love with Texas. Upon their arrival at Bick's ranch, Leslie is confronted not only with the oppressive heat and vastness of Texas, but also by the disturbing inequity between runaway riches and the poverty and racism suffered by the Mexican workers on the ranch. Leslie and Bick's loving union endures against all odds, but a reckoning is coming and a price will have to be paid. Giant, a novel by Edna Ferber, starting Thursday at noon and Friday at 2 a.m. on Recording Library of West Texas Radio. Read by listening.
knows where, who knows where?
But I'm strong, strong enough to carry him. He ain't heavy. My brother, so on we go. His welfare is my concern. No burden is he to bear. We'll get there.
It's a long, long